we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. On today's program, we'll roll back the clock to 1938 and enjoy Good News of 1938. The program was to have been the most spectacular radio show ever launched. But unfortunately, with all of its name talent, Good News couldn't quite live up to its pre-show press releases. It did fill nicely the time slot vacated by Maxwell House Showboat, marking the first time that a national network joined hands with a major film studio to create a show for sale to a commercial sponsor. The result cost Maxwell House some $25,000 a week, and the Good News of 1938 appeared on NBC for the first time in November of 1937. The concept of the program was simple. MGM would produce the show, making available every star in its field except for Garbo. Each week, a new MGM film would be previewed in a fully dramatized mini version, almost reminiscent of Lux Radio Theater. By 1940, the program had been streamlined to some 30 minutes, and within the year, had altogether disappeared. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Good News of 1939 and special guest stars Judy Garland and Fanny Brice. Another classic radio show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do.
Good News of 1938. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood invite you to join our Easter party here on Stage 30, where this afternoon, Clark Gable, Myrna Loy, and Spencer Tracy were shooting the final scene for Test Pilot, MGM's thrilling drama of aviation. Now the sets have been changed for our broadcast, and the scenic department has helped us in creating an atmosphere of Easter time at the old Maxwell House with our gracious host, Robert Taylor.
Thanks, Ted, and good evening, everybody. Well, it kind of looks like the good old Easter Bunny has really brought us a grand basket of entertainment tonight. Such good eggs as Florence Rice, Freddie Bartholomew, Bernard McFadden, Judy Garland, MGM Style King Adrian, Fanny Brice, Hanley Stafford, and that slightly cracked egg Frank Morgan. Not to mention Meredith Wilson and his rhythmic chicks, who right now will cluck out with their special Easter arrangement of It Seems to Be Spring.
It seems to be spring in my heart.
Gentlemen, brace yourselves for a session with that tantalizing, teasing tot, Baby Snooks. She has returned from a visit to her Uncle Louie in New York, and her father, played by Hanley Stafford, is rather upset by a letter he has just received. Enter Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks.
Mother, come here.
Yes, dear?
Did you read this letter from Uncle Louie?
Yes, I did. Now, please.
Oh, that child is impossible. I'm not going to be lenient with her any longer.
Now, don't lose your temper. You must remember, she's only a baby.
Baby? Why, the thing she did to poor Louie, it's incredible. The day before she left, he says she set fire to the living room curtains. And she swore to me she'd been a good girl.
Now, listen, dear. Maybe if you try to be more patient with her, she'll admit all these things and see how wrong she is.
Well, all right. I'll try a different kind of psychology.
That's fine. And remember, if you feel your temper slipping, just try the good old-fashioned method of counting up to 10.
Okay, okay.
I'll send Snooks in.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Set fire to the curtains. Oh.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh. Hello, Snooks. Come in here with Daddy.
Huh?
There's something I'd like to ask you.
I didn't set fire to Uncle Louie's curtains.
I didn't say anything about Uncle Louie's curtains.
Oh. Did Uncle Louie say anything?
We'll get to that in a minute, Snooks. Snooks, come sit near Daddy, darling.
I don't want to.
Well, why not?
Because you're too nice.
Well, Snooks, I'm quite sure you had a wonderful time in New York, didn't you?
Did I?
And I know you were a perfect angel at Uncle Louie's, weren't you?
Was I?
Stop answering my questions with a question.
Why?
1, 2, 3, 4.
What's it doing, Daddy?
Nothing, nothing at all. Now, Snooks, I want to talk about your trip to New York.
Now?
Yes, now.
We already talked about it.
I know we did. But I just got a letter from Uncle Louie.
Daddy.
What is it?
I have to go upstairs and do my homework.
Your homework will wait. Now, according to Uncle Louie's letter...
Hey!
What are you crying about?
It ain't true.
What isn't true?
I didn't put the mousetrap in his bed.
Nobody said you did.
Didn't Uncle Louie say that in his letter?
I know.
Then he didn't go to bed yet.
Oh. So now it's coming out. Snooks, I promised Mother I wouldn't lose my temper with you. You little 1, 2, 3. I ought to turn you over on your 4, 5, 6 and give you a sound 8, 9, 10. Now, what are you laughing at?
You forgot 7.
Well, I won't forget anything next time. Now, I want to know exactly what happened while you were in New York.
You mean when the eggs got smashed in Uncle Louie's pocket?
Eggs? Did you put them there?
No.
Then where did the eggs come from?
From the chicken.
Never mind about that. What else did you do?
Ain't that enough?
Snooks, I want a full confession of what you did to make Uncle Louie so angry.
Is he angry?
Oh, no. He's going to send you a cake for wrecking his clothes and setting fire to his curtains.
Why?
Because you drove him so crazy he probably thinks that's good.
You think you'll send me a box of candy, too?
What for?
For throwing the silverware down the sewer.
Oh, I can't control myself any longer. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, there.
Why'd you count like that, Daddy?
It's the only way I can control my temper and stop from giving you a spanking.
Ah.
All right. I'm calm now. Now listen, Snoop. There'll be absolutely no trouble if you'll start from the beginning and tell me everything that happened.
All right, Daddy.
Remember, everything.
It was Cousin Shirley's fault.
What was Cousin Shirley's fault?
She took half of my cat.
Half of your cat?
Uh-huh.
What on earth are you talking about?
Well, Uncle Louie said the cat was for both of us.
Yes?
So Shirley took the front end, and I took the back end.
Well, I guess there's nothing wrong with that. And didn't you play nicer together?
Sure, but Uncle Louie got mad when the cat made a noise.
Well, why did the cat make a noise?
Because I pulled its tail, but it was Shirley's fault.
If you pulled its tail, how could it have been Shirley's fault?
Well, I only pulled my end. But her end hollered.
Gee, God, that's the limit. I'm...
Count, Daddy, count.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh.
You feel better?
Never mind how I feel. I've told you time and again to be kind to dumb animals. You should never pull a cat's tail.
He was a nasty cat, Daddy.
Oh, what do you mean, nasty? Did he scratch you?
No, he didn't have good manners.
The cat didn't have good manners?
No, he kept spitting on his feet and wiping it on his face.
Well, that's the way a cat washes. Now, let's forget about the cat. Just tell me why Uncle Louie is so angry with you.
He ain't angry, Daddy.
Oh, no?
No, he's gonna have me visit him next Christmas.
Well, what makes you think so?
Because I heard him say it to Aunt Sophie.
What did he say?
He said it'll be a cold day the next time I let Snooks in my house.
Ladies and gentlemen, now that Judy Garland is back with us, we're in a position to satisfy the enormous demand you people have been making to hear Judy and Baby Snooks do their song From Everybody Sing. So here they are, Judy and Snooks singing Why Because.
Snooks?
I've been reading books.
Well, put your books away, and let's go out and play.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Because.
I don't wanna.
Well, you oughta. Let's play cops and crooks.
I wanna read my book.
Don't be a baby, Snooks. Snooks, you mustn't cry. You're too big to cry.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Because. Grown-ups never cry.
I saw Mommy cry.
You did?
Uh-huh. The time my Mommy saw my Daddy kiss the nurse goodbye.
Snooks.
What?
Can you do a sum?
No, she taught me sum.
Snooks, how much is 2 and 2?
2 and 2 is 2 and 2.
2 and 2 are 4.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Because 1 and 1 are 2. So 2 and 2 are more. Snooks, you mustn't weep. You're too big to weep.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Because big girls never weep.
I saw Daddy weep.
You did?
Uh-huh. The time my Mommy saw my Daddy walking in his sleep. Is you a girl or boy?
I've known this little Lord Fauntleroy.
Oh. What's a little Lord Fauntleroy?
Little Lord Fauntleroy is a little boy.
Oh. Why?
Because.
Why?
Because a girl's a girl and a boy's a boy.
Well, what's a little Lord Fauntleroy?
I told you twice.
You told me what?
I told you twice.
You told me what?
Oh, Snooks, go back and read your book. You're doing an awful thing.
No!
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
We
present now a young man who is one of the most important people behind the scenes on our whole lot. You've seen his name on the screen hundreds of times as he is a brilliant designer who creates the gowns for the glamorous ladies who star in MGM productions. And since his picture dresses of today often set the styles for all America tomorrow, I know that many of you will be interested in meeting him. Here he is, the incomparable Adrian.
Thank you, Don.
Well, Adrian, now that you've put in 6 or 7 months on the costumes for Norma Shearer's new picture, Marie Antoinette, do you think 18th century costumes will become popular all over again?
Well, I hardly think so. At least not as long as women drive their own cars.
Now, wait a minute. I thought we were talking about dresses. What's the connection between cars and costume?
Well, it's very simple, Bob. Imagine a girl in a skirt about 8 feet in diameter with good solid hoops to hold it up, trying to shift gears in traffic.
Yes, I see what you mean. She'd have trouble getting in a phone booth, too, wouldn't she?
Absolutely. And if she did manage to get in, she'd very soon get tired of standing up because her dress would probably weigh 40 pounds.
40 pounds? Well, that is a lot of dress, Maestro. Analyze that for us, will you?
Oh, half a dozen layers of heavy materials, a few pounds of brocade, a few square yards of silver ornament, 10 or 20 feet of hoop. It mounts up.
Yes, I imagine a dress like that would run into money, too. How about that?
Well, I should say that an elaborate evening gown of Marie Antoinette's time would cost from 10 to 15 times as much as an evening dress today. Such a dress could easily cost $2,500.
Well, there's something modern husbands can be thankful for. That'd be a nice item on a bill. One dress, $2,500.
Yes, but of course, all these dresses were designed for a society far different from our own. In Antoinette's time, everyone was either very rich or very poor.
Yes, that's true. I imagine Louis XVI could look at a bill like that and never bat an eye. But say, what about those fancy hairdressers I've seen all around the lot, those beautifully powdered wigs? Aren't they from Antoinette, too?
Yes.
Well, do you think they have any chance to start a vogue?
Well, I really doubt it, Bob. It was hard enough for Marie to start the vogue 200 years ago. Some of her headdresses were so high, they had to cut the tops out of carriages to make her comfortable. And that would be pretty drafty in a limousine doing 40 miles an hour.
Yeah, tell me, Adrian, wasn't it a little tough for Norma Shearer to get used to those 40-pound dresses and wigs 3 feet high?
Well, it was difficult, Bob. In fact, she told me after her first day of fittings that she didn't think she'd be able to go through with the picture. But here's a funny thing. After a few weeks of working in the 18th century costumes, she told me she felt completely unnatural in modern clothes.
That's so. Well, just shows what the ladies can get used to if they try.
It also shows what men can get used to. At least the ladies don't have mechanical windmills and mechanical flying birds on their hats today.
Let me have that again, please, will you?
Well, in the 18th century, the women weren't satisfied with hairdressers 3 or 4 feet high. They decorated them with complete barnyard scenes with mechanical windmills and tiny mechanical cows and so on.
With sound effects?
Well, only an occasional scream when a lady's headdress stuck to the top of a doorway.
I can imagine. Well, it's nice to know that the insane hats of 1938 are not the farthest north in fashion history.
Well, Bob, I've got to be getting back to work.
Oh, Adrian, before you go, I wish you'd do me one favor.
Sure, Bob. What is it?
Well, the fellows on the program heard you were coming up here tonight, and we got into an argument which one was the best dress, you know. Would you give us a style rating?
Well, now, that's really not quite in my line, Bob.
Oh, now, come on. We'll keep it strictly private.
Well, all right. I'd say, offhand, from a quick glimpse I got, that the best dressed man here is undoubtedly Meredith Wilson.
Oh.
Of course, you run him. You run him a very close second, Bob. In fact, I'd put you first, except I admire those beaver hats Meredith wears.
Beaver hats? He doesn't wear any hats, Adrian. That's his hair.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, who would you rank third, Adrian? Hanley Stafford or Ted Pearson or...
Just a minute. Who are those two men talking over there?
Oh, that's the janitor and Frank Morgan.
Well, I'll give him third.
What? You're giving third place to Frank Morgan?
No, I meant the janitor.
Oh.
Well, so long, Bob. See you later.
Thanks for coming over. Judy.
Yes, Mr. Taylor.
Judy, last week you sang Sweetheart of Sigma Chi, and tonight I see your next number is College Swing. You going collegiate on us?
Well, I'll be going to college pretty soon, you know.
What? A little girl like you?
Oh, no, I'm getting on in years, Mr. Taylor. Well, I'll be 15 on my next birthday.
Gee, 15. Getting to be a real old lady, huh? Can you still walk without a cane?
Well, now you're just fooling, Mr. Taylor. And this is a real serious problem with me. It's something to think about.
Well, Judy, if that's your biggest problem, I hope you never have any bigger ones. And now, how's about College Swing?
Okay.
All right, Professor W., swing it for Grandma Garland.
Wait a minute. Teacher, I'm a swinging creature. Oh,
and still I get the calling.
What do you call it?
Bob, I had to send a cable to London on a question of international importance.
Yeah, I'll bet it was important. What was it, Frank?
Well, the Morning Post of London had asked me for a 10-word description of what I plan to wear in the Easter parade.
10 words? Did you cable them?
Oh, sure I did. I said, silk hat, ascot tie, stiff shirt, coat, vest, pants, love, Frank.
That sounds like quite a daring costume, Frank. Did you make that up yourself?
Of course, Bob. Yeah. In my day, I've died. Made more style history than any man alive. Wherever well-dressed men gather, at the Savoy in London, at the Waldorf in New York, the YMCA in Brooklyn, Morgan is the model.
Taylor's dummy, huh?
You are. Well, don't worry about it, Bobby. Oh, Taylor's the dummy, sure. Clothes horse Morgan, they call me. Who do you think started the vogue for patch pockets on underwear? Who invented vestless pajamas? Who do you think made two-pant suits acceptable to the 400?
Morgan?
Right. Why, I've been approached by the Restaurant Association.
What for?
Well, they want a new style for paper panties on lamb chops. And the title they wanted to confer on me, Frank Morgan, Couturier to the Stockyard.
I never heard of such a title, Couturier to the Stockyard.
Yes, well, you'll get the wind of it.
Frank, I don't believe a word of this.
Well, Bob, haven't you ever seen my wardrobe? I have 50 overcoats, 85 tuxedos, all colors, 92 dressing gowns, 75 pairs of slacks, and 129 street suits.
129 street suits?
Yeah.
Isn't that too many, Frank?
Too many? Why, 35 of them are just for the Moors. And, what high-class Moors infest the Morgan closets? All pedigree.
Now, what are you giving me? Pedigreed Moors. I suppose they go back to William the Conqueror.
I wish they would. I've had the place exterminated 3 times.
Well, it must be a great life, Frank, being a style leader.
Oh, Bob, it's not all being Skittles. Yesterday morning, as I was sitting at my breakfast table, I suddenly began to hear the buzz of conversation, although, apparently, I was alone. I looked around the room and found the voices were coming from under the table.
From under the table?
Yes, I heard one voice say, it's Shetland. Another voice said, it's cashmere. Another voice said, you guys are crazy, it's brushed wool. Well, sir, I looked under the table and there were 3 spies from Esquire examining my socks.
Frank, Frank, that's awful.
Awful? It was insulting. I wasn't wearing any socks. But it'll probably start a vote.
Yes, I dare say.
Now, no sarcasm, Bob. You have no idea what a well-dressed man goes through. All over the country, they copy my hats, my shirts, my shoes.
I see. Whatever you wear today becomes a nationwide rage tomorrow.
Certainly. And if you don't believe it, listen to this. One day last March, I accidentally ripped the seat of my pants. And what do you think?
What?
Well, that's what started the sit-down strike. Morgan, the style leader.
Yes, Frank. You're just about the best fellow in the world, aren't you?
Well, conservatively speaking, yes. Mm.
What do you think of Meredith Wilson's clothes?
Oh, Meredith Wilson. Yes, well, Meredith has quite good taste in an uncouth sort of a way.
Uncouth? Frank, it might interest you to know that Adrian, the great style authority, rated Meredith Wilson the best-dressed man on this program. He rated me second, and you're not even in the money.
Oh, I'm not, eh? Wilson, the best-dressed man. Oh, well, that's one night. He's standing in the middle of his wardrobe right now.
What's this?
Oh, it's you, Meredith. My, you're looking spruce today.
Never mind that. I heard what you said, and when it comes to dressing, you can't hold a candle to me.
Yeah, but now, don't misunderstand me, Meredith. I think that you wear your clothes very well. Such as they are.
Now, wait a minute, Frank.
Yes?
What's the matter with the suit I'm wearing?
Well, I'll tell you, it seems a little bulgy in the around.
Oh, no, Frank. That's just because you're looking at me on the bias.
Am I?
But, this is a beautiful suit. It cost me $22.50.
$22.50?
Yep. And for that money, I got not only the suit, but a shirt, necktie, hat, shoes, overcoat, socks, and a set of dishes.
That's amazing. You walk into the store naked, you come out the hit of the Easter parade.
Excuse me, is Frank Morgan here? Yeah, there he is, the stylish stout over there.
Now, just quiet, Wilson. What is it, my lad?
Are you Mr. Morgan?
Certainly.
I'm from the downtown men's shop, and our board of directors has decided that in view of your style leadership, you should be presented with this medal in token of our... gratitude.
Well, I'll be...
Oh, you are. Now, what have you got to say, fellas?
Well, there's a little inscription on the medal, Mr. Morgan, if you'd care to read it.
Well, I certainly would. I'll fix Mr. Adrian once and for all.
Read the medal.
All right. It says, let me see. This medal is presented to Frank Morgan in recognition of his sartorial splendor by the Downtown Men's Shop. Stores conveniently located near... car lines in Pasadena, Glendale, Hollywood, and Los Angeles. You cannot beat our prices on all lines of fancy haberdashery, men's suits, slacks, and underwear, small down payments accepted, easy terms.
Holy smoke, is all that on the medal?
Well, now, just wait a minute. I'll see. It says on the other side. Here, for confidential arrangements, see Mr. Grabs, our credit manager. Don't forget our anniversary sale every Wednesday starts at 8 a.m.
That's a fine medal.
Oh, here, there's more. It says, P.S., bring this medal with you and get our 5% honor bonus discount. Well, isn't that a lovely sentiment? I'll treasure this to my dying day. In the meantime, I've got to go down to Smiling Frankie's and pay 50-cent installment on my new vest. So long.
Radio. Remember radio.
If you have a favorite show or serial you'd like to hear on an upcoming edition of Radio Yesteryear, let us know. Email requests at radioyesteryear.org. That's requests at radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Turning to our dramatic department, tonight's playlet is a drama of the sea called The Hebrides, written by Irving Reese. Our cast for The Hebrides includes Hanley Stafford. And as our leading lady, one of MGM's finest younger players, seen most recently in Navy Blue and Gold, and with Frank Morgan in Paradise for Three, the gracious and charming Miss Florence Rice. And now, Meredith, a little scene setting, please.
Night on the mid-Pacific. tilted at a crazy angle, the SS Hebrides rocks gently on the calm, moonlit sea. Huddled on the sloping poredeck, a silent group of passengers, life preservers around them, reach frightened eyes into the night. Midship, apart from the group, are Enid Houston, played by Florence Rice, and Bob Larrabee, played by Robert Taylor. They are talking.
Everything seems to have quieted down.
It's all like part of a nightmare. I'll wake up in a minute and be frightened.
We'll come through all right.
It's the stillness. If there were only a gale or a pounding sea, it would seem real. But it doesn't seem possible that we're on a sinking ship. Why do they keep sounding that ghastly horn? The wireless operator told my husband there wasn't a ship within 800 miles.
A lot of small freighters don't carry wireless. There's always a possibility that one may hear it.
It's so still between breaths.
In silent requiem. Do you remember?
Yes. You recited it for me the first night we met on board. Say it again, please.
In this half hush before the dawn, no gull on wings keeps crying. Dipping in silent requiem to the hour.
Finish it.
I've forgotten the rest.
No, you haven't. But I remember it all. In this half hush before the dawn, no gull on wings gives cry. Dipping in silent requiem to the hour when men the stars. Oh, Bob. Oh,
come on now. We're all right, really.
Forgive me. Just for a second, I felt... No, it was nothing.
Where's Lloyd?
Writing. The wireless man told him he'd let him get 500 words through for his paper.
I don't think I could bother with a story at a time like this.
But you see, it's his whole life. He's gotten so used to a world of exaggerated headlines, it just doesn't seem possible that there is a world of reality.
He should be here by your side, I suppose.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I've had 5 years of training alone.
Enid! Enid!
He's calling you now.
Enid! Oh, here you are, darling. Hello, Larrabee. Thanks for watching over the little woman. Duty before devotion, you know. Well, I got it, darling. I got the captain's permission to radio 500 words to the syndicate. Boy, what a yarn. I just finished it. Listen to it, will you? I'm calling it Staring Death in the Face on the Pacific. Here it is. Hello, folks. This is your adventure-hunting globe-girdler Lloyd Houston. Well, I told you this old headline horse would end up in harness someday, and it looks like that day is here. While you calmly read these words at breakfast, your old adventure hunter is staring death smack in the eye on the Pacific. Will that make their eyes pop? Yes, sir, the ship taking your reporter to the Chinese war front may never get there. This is probably my last adventure. For you know, because there's no cable from Davy Jones's locker, I report from there. Is that a line or is that a line? But wait a minute, you haven't heard anything yet. Yes, folks, your globe-girdler ship is listing heavily to port, caused by an accidental shift of cargo. We're sailing through a calm tropical night, but the slightest breeze may capsize us, and the nearest ship is 800 miles away. Well, folks, death may reach your old globe-girdler.
Stop it, please.
Why? What's the matter, honey? Don't you like my yarn?
No, I like it all right, but, well, perhaps you ought to send it right off.
Oh, yeah, right you are. This has got to make the morning edition. Well, so long, Larrabee. Goodbye, honey. See you when it's finished. Watch the little woman, Larrabee, will you?
Is it true about the slightest breeze?
Oh, no, I don't think it's quite that bad.
I'd rather know, Bob.
We're at the limit of our normal swaying angle. If we tilt any more...
I know. And dawn on the Pacific always brings a breeze. But this 1 hour... We have that anyway.
Oh, darling, please don't. Enid.
Oh, Bob.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
No, don't go. Hold me close, darling.
Yes, dear.
There's so little time left for pretending now.
I love you, Enid. I have loved you from the first second I saw you. I knew life would be meaningless without you from that moment. It doesn't matter if death brings us together. You're mine now.
Oh, my darling, I love you so. I do love you so.
I'm glad all this happened. We might never have known. We might have passed and gone on.
Yes. Loyalty. But they go in the face of death like mist in a high wind.
I'm not afraid of death now.
Neither am I. With you near me, darling, death and night have no meaning.
But we're going to live. We must live.
No. No, it's better this way. If we came through, well, I'd go on with Lloyd.
But you couldn't. You left me.
And he needs me. But not for much longer. So this hour is mine.
We belong to each other.
Funny. I dreamed all my life it would happen this way someday. But it didn't. And I put it out of my mind. And now it has happened. For an hour.
And nothing else matters if we come through.
The dawn's breaking.
Darling, I must know. Promise me you'll tell me if we come through.
It's getting chilly.
Promise me, Enid.
The breeze is starting.
Stand by to abandon ship.
You haven't answered.
Oh, my dearest, please. I only know I love you. Nothing can change that. Nothing. Only stay close to me now.
They're abandoning ship. We'll be separated soon, Enid. This can't be the end. No matter where we meet again, you must tell me that. You must tell me.
Enid, quick, down to the foredeck. They're abandoning ship.
I'm staying here, Lloyd.
But you can't, honey. We might capsize any second.
My mind's made up, Lloyd. I'm staying here.
But you're crazy. The ship's sinking, I tell you. You've got to go.
Please don't shout, Lloyd. I'm quite sane. I've put your wishes before mine for 5 years. I think I've earned the right to these last few minutes that I wish them.
Larrabee, will you please tell her to go? She doesn't know what she's doing.
You'd better go, Enid.
No. Please, can't you see? I want to stay here.
Officer.
What is it? What's wrong here?
My wife won't go to the lifeboat. Will you please talk to her?
You better hurry to the foredeck, madam.
I'm staying here.
Oh, she's mad. Get her out of here. Get her off the boat.
Madam, this ship is sinking. There's no time to argue. All right, now, come on.
Don't you dare.
Come on.
Put me down. Darling, stop him. Don't let him take me, darling. Please. Oh, please. Oh,
my God.
Well, buck up, Larrabee, old man. Imagine how I feel. You know, it takes a moment like this to make us realize how much someone cares for us.
And here's little Judy Garland, a new star, singing an old favorite, Crying for the Carolines. Sing it pretty, Judy.
Can't you hear me calling, Caroline? Far away.
Bob.
Yeah, what is it, Frank?
Bob, there's something I've been milling over in my mind for a long time.
I see. Sort of aged in the wood, huh?
Yes, I've got... No, Bob, I'm serious. It's about this program. We've been neglecting the educational angle. We should do things that are really worthwhile.
Yeah, for instance?
Well, for instance, take history. We could...
Frank, what do you know about history?
What do I know? Bob, you're looking at one of the ablest historians of our day. I have scouts hiding in all the libraries just picking up data. And a few telephone numbers on the side.
Your scouts dig up anything good today, Frank?
They certainly did, Bob. Now, don't let this get out, but do you know what George Washington's men said to him when they crossed the Delaware?
No. What'd they say, Frank?
They said, "Sit down, George. You're rocking the boat." You see? You could ask me anything.
Morgan, the historian, huh? Well, now, let's see. All right. What happened in 1812?
In 1812. Wow! What a wild party. I know. I was right next door in 1810. There was a little blonde who kept...
Frank, stop it.
What?
1812 was the year Napoleon retreated from Moscow.
Oh, yes, of course. I remember just as it happened yesterday. Napoleon, he said to me, Frank,
what are you talking about? That was 126 years ago.
For hell, how time flies. Say, Bob, that's quite a coincidence you're mentioning Napoleon. You know my little nephew.
Yeah, the one who writes those crazy sketches?
Yes.
Well, don't tell me he's Napoleon.
No, Bob, don't be silly. His brother's Napoleon. Napoleon Morgan. We call him Nappy for short. Sometimes when we're in a hurry, we just call him plain Nap.
Yeah. Well, that must save quite a bit of time.
Yes.
But, Frank, what's your nephew got to do with history?
Well, that's what I've been leading up to in my subtle way. My nephew has written a play all about Napoleon, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Uh-huh. You play Napoleon, I suppose.
Well, I'm certainly not the type for Josephine. That reminds me. Oh, Fanny.
Yeah, yeah.
Fanny, can you do a French dialect?
Have you got a fool?
Yeah. Well, that's splendid. You play the part of Josephine, my wife.
Is there a part for me?
Certainly. You're my chancellor. Now, let's see. What was his name?
Talleyrand.
Oh, a fan dancer?
No. Not Talleyrand. Talleyrand.
Oh. Well, I still like the fan dancer idea. I've got that.
Ew!
Oh, yes. Wilson, you're just in time. I have a great character part for you.
A character part? Say, that's great.
Yes, you're a musician for a change. You're the leader of Napoleon's army band.
Do we swing?
Yes, at the finish. We hang you and six saxophone players. Now, Bob, you just read the introduction just as my nephew has it written there.
Yeah, okay.
Please.
When the curtain goes up, there is Josephine, the emperor's wife, in the castle. Talleyrand is approaching her.
All alone, I'm so all alone. All alone, I'm so all alone. Why am I alone?
Ah, your highness.
Ah, looks like I'm not alone. Hello, Talleyrand. How goes it with you?
Oh.
I'm glad you're feeling better, Philly. What do you hear from Napoleon?
He's not doing so well with the Russians, your highness.
They're losing.
But good.
That's good. that must be Napoleon now. Back from the battle. The horse, the horse. Please, Talleyrand, the window.
Where's my fellow? Yes. Yes, here they come. They're a mile and a half away. Now they're a mile away. At the three quarters. And here comes Napoleon on the outside.
And stay in.
Now he's at the castle gate. He's in the courtyard. He's running up the stairs. Coming up in his stocking feet. And here he is now.
Open the door. Open it. It's me, Sappy. Nappy.
Ah, Napoleon.
Ah, Josephine.
Ah, Nappy.
Ah, Josie.
Oh, nuts. Nappy, what up to real? I wasn't expecting you till Monday. And here it is, only Saturday, and you're home already, my little cocky potato.
Oh, is today Saturday?
Yeah, all day.
Goody, goody. Tomorrow, funny papers.
You certainly are sight for sore articles, ma chérie.
Yes.
You haven't changed a bit. I see you're still wearing your hat sideways.
Yes, military strategy, my dear. The enemy never knows which way I'm going.
How did you fare in the battle with the Russians, my sweet Rue de la Paix?
What a struggle, my toot sweet. Freezing weather and terrific odds against us. But that's where this little corporal's military strategy came to the fore.
My Romeo.
Romeo, I'm Napoleon, remember?
Oh, yeah. Hey, wait a minute. What happened, Nappy?
I called my staff of officers to my barracks and lashed out with orders left and right. I sent 100,000 men to flank the left front by way of Smetna on the Volga. Another 50,000 men to flank the right front by way of Shika on the Schnapp. Then I started my big offense. The infantry, the artillery, the cavalry, the machine gunners, the beam shooters were all brought into action. With my usual stroke of genius, I maneuvered my men into position so that we were completely surrounded by the enemy. Then into the Valley of Death I rode, leading my gay little band of 600 Cossacks. And as we attacked, we sang, All our log is love gay. All our log is love gay.
Wait a minute. You were leading the 600 Cossacks?
Well, yes, in a way. They were chasing me. But there again, I outsmarted them. I escaped by disguising myself with a clean shirt and a beard. Then I swam the English Channel, and here I am.
You mean you lost 150,000 men?
Well, I didn't exactly lose them. We were in Siberia, and I just left them there in cold storage.
But vive la France!
Vive la France! Vive la France!
And again, Meredith Wilson brings you a tune you didn't expect to hear, the unforgettable Whistler and His Dog.
Pearson, it's now my pleasant privilege to deliver to you for a brief interrogation the charming Florence Rice, who gave us that grand performance tonight.
Oh, that's nice of you, Robert, and very gracious of you, Florence.
Well, I don't even need my woman's intuition to tell me what you're going to ask, Ted. But quite frankly, I guess when it comes to coffee, it's about the same with me as with Una Merkel and lots of my friends here in Hollywood. I've always enjoyed good coffee. And when this good news program started, I naturally tried Maxwell House. I liked it a lot, and again, naturally.
Yes?
I began to use Maxwell House coffee in my home. I do quite a lot of entertaining, Ted. And I've noticed something. I wonder if you have, too. And that is that men in particular seem to enjoy Maxwell House. At least I've had more compliments on my coffee lately. Do you know something, Ted? I suspect...
Yes, Florence, you suspect what?
Well, I suspect that the way to a man's heart may be through a cup of coffee. Maxwell House prefers.
And I suspect you're right, Florence. And I further suspect that may be a valuable hint to women everywhere. Because Maxwell House is a real man's coffee. Yes, friends, as Florence Rice says, men do like the extra smooth, rich, full-bodied goodness of Maxwell House coffee. The feeling of warmth and well-being it brings. It's friendly stimulation that buoys you up and never lets you down. So if you haven't tried this superb coffee lately, why don't you get a pound of Maxwell House tomorrow, won't you?
We join Meredith Wilson in the concert hall, where the lights have been dimmed to a prism of soft pastel shades and shadows to accentuate the mood for the rendition of Fritz Kreisler's immortal classic, the most beloved melody ever written for the violin, Caprice Viennois.
Very much, Mr. You know, I really wasn't responsible at all for the success of the picture. It was all due to Spencer Tracy and the others.
You're mistaken there, Freddy. Your work was beautifully done. I congratulate you. You're indeed a clever young trooper.
Well, thank you, sir. You know, that makes our respect for each other mutual. I understand that you, too, are interested in physical culture.
Yes, I dabble in it sometimes. But I didn't know that you followed anything of that kind.
Oh, yes, sir. At 14 years of age, I still possess the same youthful vigor and the same vital interest in life as I did at 7.
Remarkable indeed. But I'll tell you what. We'll give you a little more time, say about 10 years, and then I'll challenge you to a wrestling match. And on the, we'll determine then which system of health is the best.
Well, I shall start training immediately. And as for the wager... I think I could manage up the sum of, 17 cents. You understand, sir, the recession and everything.
Done, my boy. Cheerio. Until then, Master Bartholomew.
And as we say in America, Mr. McFadden, I'll be seeing you, pal. And really, in behalf of everyone concerned, thank you for the wonderful award.
Next week, we're going to have another great show, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm sure you won't want to miss. All your regular favorites will be here.
Excuse me, Bob.
Yes.
Here's a message just came for you.
Oh, thanks, Ed. Say, listen to this. In addition to our regular cast, next week we're going to do a preview of Test Pilot with Clark Gable, Myrna Loy, and Lionel Barrymore. What a show that's going to be. Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Judy Garland, Meredith Wilson, plus these stars of Test Pilot. Be sure you don't miss it. This is Bob Taylor saying good night. Thank you.
Heard on tonight's program, the college swing from the picture of the same name. Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck to the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good for the last book. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From sometime in 1939, it's been good news from NBC, with special guest stars Judy Garland and Fanny Brice. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have left today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, dodio, do.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.